Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 461, I'm welcoming back to the show Sarah Haggerty.
I think for many of us, we have to accept a new reality that our weakness, your messy kitchen, your overflowing sock bin, your missing shoe, or if you've got teenagers and the, like, you know, struggle to connect and the heartache of launching and the, all the worries about what it looks like around the corner, that those things might actually be a part of the very good, good elements of God that He wants to give to you.
This is the third time Sarah has been on the podcast, and we've linked to the other two episodes in the show notes. Today, she's coming on to talk about the gift of our limitations. And while you might be like, no thanks, I'm not in a great place right now. Maybe you are disappointed in where you find yourself. Sarah gets it. She shares her testimony of walking through infertility and the limitations of her body. And now, after through adoption and her own miraculous pregnancies, being the mom of seven kids and the limits that has given her that she's pushing up against oftentimes. I appreciate how she walks us through this come, die, grieve, and live cycle, just the power of naming your limits and noticing your responses to them, and then grieving or bringing that to God and then moving forward. I hope if you are in a place of disappointment that by the end of this, you will have a little more hope and perspective. And if anything, you feel less alone. So let's get right to it. Here we go. Sarah, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
Oh, I'm so glad to be back. I love this podcast.
Oh, you're so sweet. And I was looking at the titles of all your books. Okay. You have a gift for talking about things nobody wants to talk about, like bitter things and hidden things.
Tell that to my family. They might not like that as much.
And limitedness. Like, you're talking about all the things we just want to not talk about. And you're so good at, like, saying it pretty and also relatable. You know what I mean? It's not like so far out there that I'm like, what is she talking about? But
thank you.
Anyway, thanks for handling this new topic that I was telling you, I feel like I'm being led by the Holy Spirit when other people are talking about the things I want to talk about. Like, I think the Holy Spirit has something to say to us about embracing where we are and our limitations. And so let's talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So here we are talking to moms, and I can't think of a more limited, obviously limited group than moms who have little humans dependent on them. And in our society, even if it takes two to make a baby, oftentimes the buck stops here on the feeding and the caring and the nurturing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that men don't. I'm not saying that, people. But talk to us.
Mom knows who needs to be at soccer practice at what time and where their uniform is.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw some interview ones, and it was like interviewing a dad of four girls, and the mom was standing right there, and the interviewer was like, what's the name of your girl's pediatrician? And he just blank stared. Like, and they're like three more questions, blank stare. Anyway, not to dog dads, but to we say, like, that there's a lot we have going on.
There's a lot we have going on. And then we have a day. In one day today, I'm going to get 20 more ideas for what I can do with my kids to make their lives more rich and to make my existence as a mom better. So it's like a lot going on. But really, is it also that there's so many ideas and opportunities and ideologies available to me?
I so resonate with that, that some of the overwhelm is mom created. Like, that some of this we do to ourselves.
Well, and interesting, before we started interviewing, you said dinner or breakfast is on. You have air frying sausage for your son. Now, you're not telling me to be a good mom, Sarah, you need to do that. But my mind, if I'm not careful, is going to go to, I don't feed my teenage son breakfast. He's like grabbing a piece of toast on the way out the door himself. You know, it's not even just what it's not even just what's available out there, but it's like what my mind does, right?
It's what we like, we're always measuring. Am I doing this right? Am I doing enough?
How am I screwing them up? How?
What are they going to talk to their counselor about?
Right.
And yeah, I do. I agree with you. Like we're comparing, you know, and I could read your book and you take this walk with your kids in the woods, right? Like, oh, I wish I lived because I grew up in the woods. Like I love, and we live a block away from a highway. You know what I mean?
Right. So, and you can't take a walk with your kids because you're fixing them breakfast and I'm shoving them down with a piece of toast. If that, it might just be bread.
If the toaster's broken, who knows? Yeah. No, I do think there's this comparison, and what I appreciate too, yes, for ourselves, we hold this like idealism in comparison. And then with each other, which I think impacts the mom community we desire.
Yeah, it really does. Gosh, that's a take a moment of silence for that.
Right? Yeah. And then it's like you said, even not just comparing how could I be better with my kids, but I love how you compare versions and of your own timeline and wants and desires you had, 20-year-old version, 24-year-old version, and your reality now. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about that, because you've been on the show before and you've shared some of your story, but some people don't go back and listen to all 400 episodes. I don't know. So tell a little bit about your story and how you bumped up against some of this realization of.
Yeah, well, I have 7 kids, my 4 older kids. I know.
Take a break.
All of a sudden, your listeners are going, she's nuts.
7 kids.
I have 7 kids. My 4 oldest are adopted, 2 from Ethiopia and 2 from Uganda. And my 3 youngest were all big surprises in my much later years. Like I have a child out of the house, launched. I have 2 more graduating in a month, and I have a 4-year-old. So I've got a lot of crazy. So in my 20s, I just had a ton of – we had a long stretch of infertility, and we always knew we wanted to adopt but didn't think we'd adopt first. But I had a long stretch of time to take parenting classes and read books and fill my mind with vision for what my parenting was going to be like. And in the meantime, I had great loss, like profound loss, over a decade of infertility and going – watching my friends not only birth their – I mean, I didn't literally watch, but, you know, they had like you went first to
all,
child.
All the baby showers and all the growing
all the baby showers, yeah. 4th floor Martha Jefferson Hospital in Charlottesville, Virginia. I should have had a frequent flyer card because that's where my friends had their babies. And then their first and second and third birthday parties – and we were still struggling with infertility. So, but during that time, I sort of compensated at times for my pain by creating a greater vision for what I was going to do when I finally had kids. And then fast forward into my 30s, and I started to notice I'm finally getting what I want. You know, we had these 4 kids in 2 years. We had an instant family. And then I was daydreaming about when I was 25 and had hours to read and could cook a full meal and follow the recipe instead of throwing things in at the end to try and get it ready. And my house was clean. And I started to go, oh, there's a theme here. I'm in every season of life daydreaming about another season and thinking about how limited I am from what I really want. Mm.
Yeah. And I think that there's this pull I hear of not ever being satisfied, and then also feeling shame and guilt for not ever being satisfied. Like Absolutely. Friends of mine who did struggle with infertility, and now they have a full gaggle of kids, and it's like, and they feel like it's not okay to even complain because isn't this what I always wanted?
Gosh, that's so true.
So how have you reconciled that? Like noticing these limits, also noticing your discontent with your new limits, like I love how you said, my limit was my body before, and now my limit is my time and just the massive amount of needs. It's like both are limited states, but in both you are pushing against. How do you give yourself grace?
Oh gosh, such a good question. Well, I think one of the things is just noticing and observing our life. Mm-hmm. I think we, like you said, shame ourselves into, well, I should be grateful. I should be happy. And so we just kind of like slap ourselves around, like, just do it, girl, be happy, like coach ourselves.
Yeah.
When I think God so mercifully, as he shows us in his word, he uses long stories to teach people. You know, you look at Joseph at the end of his life, or not the end, but you know, the summation of his story, he looks at his brothers and says, what you intended for evil, God intended for good. And we think like, okay, we're going to coach ourselves there. Well, reality, you look at Joseph and he wept over and over throughout the course of his story. He lived a long, hard story. And I think noticing our own lives and recognizing there is a story that God is working in our limitations.
Yeah.
So girl, your hard right now is not something you need to coach yourself out of. It's probably actually something you need to allow yourself to feel and grieve. Because there's something God is doing in limiting you. It's not actually that you can't get yourself out of the limitation or that you can't get yourself happy in it. There's a moment of sitting with God in the pain of it that I think does a deep work to produce the look what God did. You know, I found out I was pregnant with Charlotte, my four-year-old, when I was 42. And it was the absolute surprise of our lives. Like I literally two nights before had told my husband, I am drowning in needs. These kids need me and there is not enough of me to go around and I'm drowning. I'm like crying into my pillow. And then 2 days later, I find out I'm pregnant and I'm like, oh my word. I think of that Jim Gaffigan skit, you know, you're drowning and somebody hands you a baby. I'm like, this is my life. But I had to actually give myself permission. And I did this privately and with a few close friends and with my husband and the Lord to grieve.
Yeah.
Instead of going, you should just be happy. You wanted kids all this time. I went, no, this is actually really scary because I feel like I'm drowning and now I have another life to take care of. And I gave myself permission throughout that pregnancy to grieve and also pray over my baby, you know, oh Lord, let it not touch her that I'm grieving so heavily. But the other side of it is she's become the absolute delight of our lives. And I don't think she would have been if I didn't give myself permission to grieve the limitations that I couldn't take the trips with girlfriends because I'm actually having a baby while they're launching their teenagers. That I couldn't actually go run that race because I felt like I was 80 when I was pregnant at 42. That we can't engage with our family around the country to the degree that my other siblings can because I have 7 kids, not 6. But grieving that enabled me now to, when this child enters my world with her big, huge, curly blonde hair and her little voice, I can go, this is one of the best gifts God has ever given me.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Given what Sarah said, moms, how are you doing? Are you able to name your limits and notice your responses to them? Are you clued into how you are doing emotionally? What is your social battery like right now? Are you spread really thin, or are you stuck? What has helped me when I'm in those places is to get outside perspective, great questions, and that often comes from therapy. Now, I get when you are in the season of little kids, it can be hard to schedule. When you have to find childcare and when you need to find a person, that was a big barrier for me. Well, I would love to connect you with BetterHelp because if you are thinking of starting therapy, BetterHelp is a great option because it's entirely online. It is designed to be convenient and flexible and suited to your schedule. You will fill out a brief questionnaire and you'll get matched with a licensed therapist. And if it's not a great match for you, you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I would love to get you the support you need. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DMA today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DMA. I shared the story in my book of how my mom had a 16-year-old and an 11-year-old when she found out that, whoop, whoop, I was coming along.
She knows!
And the gift of God's provision that we don't see now. So in the moment, my mom had had my sister when my mom was 16. So she was ready to have her life and she started speaking, which was in the 70s, women Christian speakers wasn't really a thing, right? Women teaching the Bible publicly. But she was given this position and she found out about it the day she found out she was pregnant with me. But she had to set that aside. And thankfully, she embraced this role and she went hardcore and she was like homeschool mom, making her own pasta, had her own garden. Like, and so I had this amazing childhood because she did embrace that limit. Mm-hmm. And fast forward, who did she live with when my dad passed away, when she mm-hmm. got cancer, when she had to move away from Costa Rica? It was this surprise daughter. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you don't know in the moment the good that God has when it disrupts what your plan was.
That's right.
And those limits, like, I love that you say, name your limits. So maybe the gal listening right now or guy hasn't even considered, like, they're feeling this discontent or this envy or this too much or this not enough. And maybe we just need to pause. So let's talk about, like, just naming them.
Yes.
That process.
I think sometimes we're scared to name them because we don't want to be that tantruming 3-year-old or tantruming teenager,
yeah.
really, right? Like, and so we don't want to name them because we are afraid that we're going to become that complaining nag of a woman. The reality is we actually become, I mean, I just have to say it, we become that by not naming them because it bleeds out, it leaks out everywhere. Like my being snappy with my husband or with my kids, my like raiding the fridge or scrolling on my phone, all of that are byproducts of me not actually naming what's hard, but reacting to it. Mm-hmm. There's a power to just naming our limitations because after that, we can sit with God. We have something to sit with God rather than I just feel numb, which is how many of us, you know, we actually can go, actually, maybe I don't feel numb. I feel really sad. Mm. You know, I think of, not with Charlotte, but with another one of all my pregnancies were very surprised because they were later in life. Found out I was pregnant and my mom, it was her 70th birthday. And my mom, I forgot we share that in common. Both of our dads have died. And my mom's siblings were having this big surprise party for her 70th, which I didn't even really catch the pieces because my brain was so foggy because I was pregnant. And I couldn't go because I had broken my ankle. So I've broken my ankle. I'm pregnant. I already have 5 kids. I can't get on a plane. And the narrative in my head over and over again was like, see, I have so many kids and I live across the country. My life's so hard. I can't go, which I think is a lot of what we do. We just have these narratives that we just keep telling ourselves. But when I actually sat down with it and sat with God, I went, I feel like the limits in my life are keeping me from connecting with the people I love most. I feel like my limits are making me not belong. And that's a feeling I've had since I was a kid, that I just don't fit, mm-hmm. that I just don't belong. And my limitations actually only exacerbate that feeling. There's a lot more for me to work through with God when I'm saying, I feel like I'm standing on the other side of the window, glass, storefront glass, looking at what's happening inside, and I'm on the outside again. That's a deeper conversation than just the wah, wah, wah. I have so many kids. I have, you know, so I think there's a power when we name it, we have something to talk to God about.
Yeah. No, I think that is the deeper work than just, like we'd said a few minutes ago, beating yourself up in shame and guilt. Like, I shouldn't be sad that I'm pregnant and missing out because I've wanted these kids all along, mm-hmm. and what a gift. And, mm-hmm. or, you know, just being angry at everyone that they get to go and you don't get to go. I think that curiosity and that sitting with God and that recognizing that was a good mm-hmm. example. Good job. Mm-hmm. And not just naming the limit, but like you said, noticing your response to the limit is a huge part. Like you said, like noticing what goes on with you repeatedly when you hit a limit.
Yeah, we don't want to become complainers. And so we kind of don't name it. We ignore it. And in the meantime, I become a complainer because it keeps coming out sideways because I had a friend who told me once, Sarah, almost every time we talk, you preface what you're saying with, I have 6 kids. Now that was it. And it was like a hard look in the mirror. Like I was like, oh yeah. All the time I'm going, I'm limited, but it's coming out sideways instead of what I think is ultimately what happens when we begin to name our limits, we can actually grieve them. And when we grieve them, we have the ability to then have God meet us and begin to tell us, this is actually the story I'm giving to you.
Yeah.
You didn't fall into this rabbit hole. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't a mistake. This is purposed. Your limits are purposed. And those things come out of grief, not actually out of a great sermon. And so when I can go, oh, this is really impacting me, even though I'm pretending like it's not. So I'm going to sit and grieve this. Then I start to get some of the insight of God. And it feels like, okay, then I can start to go, actually, my story is really, really, really good. And it's hard, but there are really, really good parts of it.
When I hear under what you're saying, sometimes when circumstances are hard or we feel like we're letting people down, I don't know if that's true for you,
yeah,
like that.
Gosh. Yes.
Constantly. Your friend saying you preface, I have six kids, so that's why blah, blah, blah. Like,
so that's why I couldn't bring you the meal or I couldn't show up, yes, or, you know, whatever. Yes.
I text the coach, Knox is going to be late to the football game. I'm trying to do all the things. And then I did say, but it's my birthday, so you can't be mad at me. Okay. But like, this is the, I am the same as you. I'm like, the people aren't judging me as much as I'm judging myself. I have this bar.
Internal narrative.
Yeah. Yes. This internal narrative, this bar of like, or idealism you talked about. And it must be my circumstances that are causing me to not hit the bar. It can't be that no one's expecting me to hit this bar and it's okay. And this is the space. And I just need to be sad that maybe in the season I can't hit that bar. And who set up the bar anyway?
And what's the bar doing for my heart and my life?
What is this outside of my, like, I love how you say the fence, outside of my fenced in, I'm trying to live this massive life. And that's in my own strength. And so, like you said, it's this conversation with God. And I also heard you say, like, it's this faith walk with God. Can I believe that even if these circumstances don't look good, he's good? Do I trust that what he's assigned me is good, even if it doesn't feel good, even if it's not what I desire?
Which I think we say, but if we're all honest, we really don't believe. But going, I mean, your bar analogy, I think that, gosh, the pressure that we put on ourselves, like I feel like I would want to say to my younger, the younger version of me, like, C's get degrees, baby. Like, truly.
Put that on a shirt. Yeah.
I think one of the biggest hindrances to my motherhood is trying to get an A.
Mm-hmm.
I look back and I'm like, God never asked me to be super mom, but it's my bar that I'm killing myself for. And actually, when I am a C plus mom is when I'm happiest.
Yeah.
When I am settled in, I'm not going to make it all. I'm not, you know, we have this upcoming weekend, three events at the same time. I'm not going to make them all for my kids.
Yep.
And one kid may remember 20 years from now how I wasn't there for them. Really? I mean, they just might. But there's something about waking up into, I can't do it. I can't do it all. And not only can I not do it all, but like when I am weak, God is strong. We say it, that verse in Corinthians, when I am weak, God is strong. We use Paul's words, but it's not until we actually live when we can't show up for our parents' 70th birthday party or when we forget to bring the snack to school or when the kid has a big, I mean, I think of my son's track meet last year that I drove an hour to get there. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. And we pull up and he's walking off the track from his last event of the entire season. And I mean, the heartache. And yet in my mind, I'm like, God is allowing this because the A plus mom, I'm going to kill me and I'm going to kill them. But when I'm a C mom, then I actually get to watch the power of God move and I start to believe that his story is the one that is best and he can be trusted, not my strength.
Yep. I think about that with the limitations, like we said, name your limits, like the physical limitations for the mom who has cancer right now and she can't be at the things or she's in her bed and it's trusting that our presence isn't the formula to make amazing kids.
Man, I watched that. My mentor actually had cancer. And it was profound to me to think of how God was using her limitations in her daughter's and son's life. Yeah. Like, and I didn't know then. I actually was diagnosed with Lyme disease last year after I turned in my manuscript for this book. And so I've spent a lot of time in bed and a lot of time like just being reminded that God is the one who is working in their life, not my physical presence. And that's one thing that we tell ourselves. This is the interesting thing about the circumstances we find ourselves in where we are very limited. We can hear it in a sermon or a podcast and tell ourselves 100 times, when I'm not present, God will be enough for them. For probably 99.9% of us, we actually have to have a circumstance where we can't be to see he's going to be enough. I mean, some of the greatest work in my family has happened in the last year that I have been, well, really several years that I have been, had gross limitations from my, I mean, gross in terms of large limitations from my Lyme disease.
And I
couldn't tell myself that. I couldn't tell myself, I actually have to live. You have to live the friend who's sick and you can't bring her the meal. And you see how God grows that friendship even though you didn't show up for her. You have to live the kid who has an assignment that needs parental help and you forgot and you see that God met your kid. You have to live being in bed during their senior prom and you're taking pictures in the bedroom and not, you're not at the big photo shoot to see God is going to meet your kids when you are not enough, to start to believe he's using my limitations to mature me.
Yeah. And it's true for our financial limitations. We think, oh yes, if we just had money to do that family trip, then we'd have a connected family. If we just had
money. And then they'd have the memories.
Yeah. If we just had money to send them to that fancy school, then their opportunities and their friendships and their faith would grow. It's like, I think sometimes those limits I've seen in friends' lives have actually produced the fruit in the children because they were trusting God. We can't lean on the formula of X plus Y, whatever equals Z. We've got to trust you. And, and of course he shows up. I'm super thankful that we continue to partner with Thrive Market. It is my go-to for grocery and household and beauty essentials with the convenience of getting it online and shipped to my door. It's such a big time saver. It's also great because they have fantastic brands, the highest quality ingredients, great sourcing methods, and wonderful filters that suit my lifestyle needs. So whether I'm if you are looking for organic kid snacks, or for me, low sugar alternatives, like my favorite Lily chocolate chips. Oh my goodness, they're so good. All their chocolate stuff. Gluten-free pantry essentials. They even save me time because they keep what I've ordered in the past at the top. And so I can pick and choose things that I need more of. And they have deals, all the time deals. In my latest order, my son had seen commercials for the Poppy. You know what I'm talking about? The probiotic soda. And so I ordered him some at 23% off and I put it in his Easter basket. Nothing says happy Easter like prebiotic soda. You know what I mean? I also got more of the Indigo Wild Zum Clean Laundry Soap. It smells so good. And my son also loves the organic roasted seaweed by Gimme. He eats all of them so quickly. If you are looking to save time and money and also give back, it's my favorite thing because it's totally the Don't Mom Alone theme, is when you join Thrive Market, you're also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. So when you join, they give. You can save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/DMA for 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. That's T-H-R-I-V-E, market.com/DMA, thrivemarket.com/DMA. Speaking of limitations, one limitation we've had as we have a big family is space in our home. And we definitely have not had enough space to create a home gym for our boys, even though they wanted it, especially during COVID. There wasn't space for all those free weights and bars and all that jazz. And so I was thrilled when Total Gym reached out because it's this great option for our family. One, I love that there's no assembly required. So it's set up in a few minutes right out of the box. And I love that it conveniently folds up for storage. You could put it under your bed. You could put it in your closet. I prefer the dining room if, you know, that's a good option for me. What I also love is that my 12-year-old can use it. My 50-year-old husband can use it. And everyone's getting a great workout in just 10 to 20 minutes because it uses a percentage of your body weight as the resistance. So you can decide if you want the incline higher to build muscle, lower to tone and slenderize. The unique design allows you to move from one exercise to another without adding or removing weights. It's awesome. You can strength train, cardio, stretch, all in one machine. I am a big Pilates fan, and so I can do Pilates using the Total Gym, some of my exercises. And if you want to try it, what's great is they're having a deal right now that you can try Total Gym for 30 days for just a dollar plus free shipping. I'm serious, $1. And their new Total Gym Fit is the newest model, and it lets you do over 85 exercises in one home gym. You're never going to get bored working out again. And like I said, it's for all fitness levels and ages. It's in over 4 million homes. So this isn't just another fitness trend. They are a brand you can trust. Remember, it only takes 10 to 20 minutes a day to reshape your body. Head to totalgymdirect.com/DMA for an additional 20% off your order. Plus, that includes a free ab crunch attachment and free shipping. This special offer won't be available for much longer. That's totalgymdirect.com/DMA for an additional 20% off. And make sure you go to my URL. It's totalgymdirect.com/DMA so they know I sent you. I love your quote, trust creates a powerful ability to be present. And then being present reinforces that trust that enabled the presence. Like, it's like this cyclical machine. So talk to us about this concept of being present. So yes, we have these limits, and yes, we've named the limits and we've noticed our reaction to them. And I think we know we should be present.
Absolutely.
Present, whether we're in the bed and we are missing out or whatever, but it is a little bit harder to implement. Like you said, we hear a sermon, it's harder to implement. So how have you found?
I think for me, I've always tried to do things to be present. Like, I sort of have seen it as like, if I could just tell myself, be present and really focus on those things. I do a lot to try and limit my phone usage so I can be present. But the truth is, I might not have my phone with me, but my mind might be spinning about a conversation I had with a friend 2 hours earlier, and my kid is dancing in front of me and I'm a million miles away.
Yeah.
And so I think there's these disciplines we can do to be present, but there's really one of the greatest avenues for engaging in what's right in front of us is facing our limitations head on, naming them, grieving them, sitting with God and letting Him give us His story. And then I think as they come up, we don't have to ruminate in such a way that we're not present. I mean, how many times have we been on the soccer sidelines and some mom says she did this one thing with her kid, and now we're lost for 20 minutes thinking about how we don't do those things with our kid? Or you're at a party and you see one kid be really sweet and polite, and you actually can't engage with the rest of the party because you're thinking, my kid's headed to jail for sure because they cannot be that polite. You know, it's just – so I think when we get to actually process those thoughts with God, like, I feel limited. You know, I think with 7 kids, gosh, the things we did with our big kids in terms of even training, mm-hmm. very different with our littles when there's 4 teenagers who really have big hearts that need us to be attentive, and little kids that we just don't have the time that we used to.
Yeah.
And so I can either beat myself up, I have 7 kids, so I can't do it as well with number 7 that I did it with number 1, or I can go, this is really hard. Mm-hmm. It's a reality to my life that number 7 may not have the manners that number 1 had. Mm-hmm. I'm going to grieve this with you because we don't want to let ourselves grieve it, but that's actually those paper cuts, they hurt. Death by 1,000 paper cuts. I'm going to grieve this with you, God. And the more I grieve it, the more when I see number 7, maybe not, doesn't have the manners that number 1 has, it's not all me ruminating about it. I'm actually going, no, you gave me a different story for number 7 than you did for number 1. And I trust you. Mm-hmm. And I can be really present with number 1 right in front of me rather than thinking about all the things that she didn't do.
Man. Yeah. I think when I leave, and like you were saying, on the sidelines with the mom, I think this would be really helpful practice for building the mom community. People reach out all the time because it's Don't Mom Alone. Mm-hmm. I want friends. I want people. And I think there are people around you that we're missing because we're constantly seeing the post about they've been friends since 1974. Oh, they all went on that girls' trip to Cabo or all this stuff. It's like, mm-hmm. part of this, if we've done that inner work of being content, maybe you have an only child and you're grieving the limitation of the only child because I remember a mom, I was on a playground and her son was being unkind to other kids. And I was like, those are your brothers and sisters in Christ. And he got really upset. And then she got mad at me. And she's like, he doesn't have any brothers and sisters. Like this woe is me situation. And I'm like, he does in Christ. This is a message you could give him. This is a gift you could give him. Anyway, I just think if we sit and we ruminate and we're mad about this, and like you said, we don't take the time to grieve and do the work to trust God so we can be present, we will miss out on those relationships because we're constantly needing people to be something they can't, or envying people, which creates distance. Or I've done this, been around people and been so exhausted after being with all the moms because all new things that I could possibly do showed up in my brain, and it's wearing me out. So I do think this practice will help community. Have you seen that to be true for yourself?
I think it does, because I think the more vulnerable, and I know that's like a buzzword, so let's maybe separate that from the popularity of it. Let's use a different word. The more raw we can be with God, rather than coming to him after we've cleaned up, but like, this is, I'm not going to be embarrassed that it's hard for me that I have 7 kids and all I wanted was to have a big family. I'm going to actually come raw and go, this is hard. And I don't need to come with the caveats. This is hard, but I'm so grateful I have 7 kids. I mean, I haven't said any of those caveats on this interview because really deep down, I am so grateful for 7 kids that I don't even need to say it. It's oozing out of me. It might not be in this interview, but it's oozing out of my everyday that I'm loving the story that God has given me, even though it's hard. But I think the more raw that we can be with God, the more raw we can be with other people. I think of 2 of my dearest friends here have different scenarios in their life that I really want. And I have scenarios in my life that they really want. And we have taken steps to be honest with each other about our pain. My particular pain, they have the opposite of that in blessing in their life, and in a reverse way also. But the more that we can open up and say, this is hard, and not in a like, this is hard, I can't be around you when you're celebrating this thing, but more just when I'm sharing about me, I'm going to say that this part of my life is hard. The more I actually don't do the comparison game with them anymore. Because they know my heart and they've validated it. And I know their heart and hopefully I validated it. And so it doesn't feel like we're actually comparing apples to apples because we're very different people with different stories that God is working. And we're both wishing we didn't have the limitations we did, but we're beginning to embrace them.
And I'm thinking, yes, friendships also, I was realizing as you're talking that our kids might feel that pressure if we're comparing. Like, why can't you be like the kid who has the good manners?
Oh my goodness, I'm sure.
We want to be close with our kids, but then we're actually creating distance because we're holding them to a standard. Like,
even if we don't say it, they read it from us.
Why can't you be a different kid? Why can't you be like your brother? Why can't you be like this person? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I watch my kids have inherited my own, like, if we could just meet the bar here. And, you know, the gift of having teenagers is they're pretty honest with you about how you've hurt them. So I'm learning. I've heard
we have a whole episode on honest teenagers.
Ouch.
Man, I think you've said this, but I know in your book, you actually name this process you've talked through, the come, die, grieve, live cycle. I think that's just a pretty way to say what you've already shared. But
yeah, I feel like for me, I just like things to be palatable. Mm-hmm. And so if I know, okay, I'm facing a certain limitation, if I can already go, I've probably really not named it. I felt guilty that I have it. I felt entitled that I'm even sad about it. But instead, I'm going to just come to the Lord. I'm going to name it. I'm going to give myself permission to grieve it. I'm going to recognize that in the grief, there's going to be some dying. Like, there are parts of my story that in my 20-year-old self thought that God healed everything, made everything better, and that it was just upward and onward always. And I am realizing at 46 that there are parts of my life that may always be painful. There are certain elements in my life that are not going to get tied up. And that is a scary, sad death. But it's also coming to that realization is actually incredibly liberating to go, I can accept that there are some things that will not look pretty on this side. And so we come, or we grieve and we die. to some of the ideals that we once had. And in that deep acceptance of my family may not be what I thought it was going to be, or my 40s, my friends are living their best life in their 40s, many of them, you know, like, and it's not going to be that way. Mine looks different. But I would say then I get to accept I actually am living my best life. I am. I'm living the best life. That the best story for Sarah Haggerty at 46 was not at all what she thought it was. Mm. It wasn't what she dreamed it would be. But I can come, die, grieve, and then I can actually live the life God has given me, not the one I keep dreaming of. And it's pretty great.
Mm. That's good. What would you tell the mom who literally in this second, her house is a disaster? She's got three little kids. I saw her at Target yesterday. She's got three little kids.
Wait, you saw me at Target?
No, I'm just, yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe she had a huge career that she set aside for a moment. And this is her reality right now. These are her limits. And yeah, how does she find beauty in that?
I think I would say that, you know, just for a catchy phrase that sticks with us, weak is the new strong. I think for many of us, we have to accept a new reality that our weakness, your messy kitchen, your overflowing sock bin, your missing shoe, or if you've got teenagers and the, like, you know, struggle to connect and the heartache of launching and the all the worries about what it looks like around the corner, that those things might actually be a part of the very good, good elements of God that he wants to give to you. I mean, they're all good, but like this, you're weak might actually be the strength of your life, that you might be in this terrible, seemingly terrible moment. And he is going, and I'm making her into something marvelous from this weakness.
And y'all can just keep replaying that in those hard moments. Like,
weak is the new strong.
Weak is the new strong. Yeah. It doesn't get applause like your other books, The Hidden Parts, The Unseen. Mm-hmm. They don't get applause. We're told by society that we can be limitless. Time is not a thing anymore. We can ignore our
optimize everything.
Optimize, maximize. Yeah. What have you implemented in your own life with your physical limits that you now have with sickness and after writing this book? Like, how is there anything you've implemented beyond that practice that's been helpful?
I think there's maybe two things. I've kind of taken on the daily office, and I probably shouldn't even use the term because I've morphed it to be what it is for me, but just two or three times a day for 5 to 7 minutes, because I really don't have much more time than that, but just sitting in quiet with a piece of scripture, 2 minutes of quiet, 3 minutes of reflection, 2 minutes of quiet again, like allowing myself to recognize that I got a whole lot going on and I need these connects with God. I think that's been significant. I also, oddly out of this, because I don't think we can just like coach ourselves into gratitude, I actually am coming off of a long season of really pretty deep grief, pretty intense grief. I write about it in the book. My husband and I both just walking through some profound losses. And one of the things I've found is that your microscope gets turned up in grief. Weirdly, in great loss, you start to notice like the butterfly. You notice the robin in your front yard. You notice your child's laugh in a way you maybe didn't. You can. And so I've started to actually just all day long kind of write down little things I'm grateful for. It's been one of the ways through grief, identifying that grief will not consume me to the point that I can't ever get up and out of bed, but I actually can find more beauty in grief even as I grieve. So that's been one other practice for me.
Those are good ones. I think I needed to hear those too. And not in a comparison way, but in just
well, I'm gonna go cook my kids' breakfast.
Yeah, just in a like it's good to be reminded, because I think we get caught up in other practices that, like, you know.
Yeah, right. Phone, absolutely. You know, oh my goodness. Yes.
That it does consume my time and my energy and my focus, that to take 7 minutes, it's like nothing. I mean, I think I played one of my games on my phone for 30 minutes, right? Like I've got
our time. Screen time, man.
I've got time. My screen time would tell you I have plenty of time that I could have on office with God. Thank you, Sarah, for all these fantastic reminders. Thank you for writing a beautiful book, and just always good to be with you.
Thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Okay. My virtual assistant, Megan, new gal that's been working with us, she said this was one that she had to pull out the Kleenex for, that it really struck her. So Emmett may have been one that struck you as well. And I'm curious if you can just take time to do the come, die, grieve, and live cycle, the naming your limits and grieving your limits and moving forward. Maybe even just identifying what areas are you trying to be an A-plus mom, and you can let go of that and just be a C mom. Are there areas that you're asking and pushing against your limits, and maybe you need to surrender to them? So this is a great episode to maybe sit with God after and just have a conversation with him. What did he bring to mind for you? I know I've been processing a lot, and even an episode I just recorded that'll go live in a few weeks. Lots of tears for me in this topic. So I'm just very emotional lately. I'm going to pray for us as we process. Lord, oh, the coming to grips with our limitations, the trusting you is the key to us being present. And being present reinforces the trust. I pray for each person who's listening, who has the ache of their wants and what they want their life to look like, the ache of their limits, and the grief of recognizing all of that together. I know that you are our great comforter. I pray that you would show up like you always do, that you're always with us, but that we would reach out to you, bring these things to you so that you can comfort us and remind us of what is true. And in this space we might find ourselves in, that we would surrender to you. I pray for anyone specifically right now who has been avoiding really big emotions, that they would acknowledge them, they would make time with you, and find rest in your provision, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, lots of good episodes coming up. Make sure you are subscribed. I don't ask that much. I don't ask you to subscribe much, but I subscribe to some podcasts, and it is really nice that when I open the podcast app, that it shows me, hey, there's a new episode from your show that you listen to, and I don't have to go searching for it or forget about it. Also, when we get people subscribing to the show, if someone's just searching, it's more likely to show them Don't Mom Alone. And if you get encouragement from it, it could be an encouragement to them. So this is a way that you can help be on my marketing team and help spread the word, because I don't have a vast marketing team. You're it. So thank you whenever you share, whenever you subscribe, whenever you leave a review. All of that is super helpful for continuing the mission of Don't Mom Alone. And so thank you for partnering with me. All right, I hope you have a great rest of your week. Adios.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone, because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.